The meeting it was.
House Committee on Judiciary come to order today is Tuesday, June 23rd. We have an informational meeting today, and it's on the aging out of the Oregon Youth Authority. Invited testimony only. Joe O'Leary, Sang Dow, and Tony Steiner, please. Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joe O'Leary. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Youth Authority. As a former Judiciary Council alum, it's lovely to be back in the Judiciary Committee. And it's especially great to be here with two really extraordinary young people who you're going to hear from today. I am going to cover a few of the legal issues that I understand you're interested in around the unique situations that DOC youth in OYA's physical custody face as they are with us and as they transition out of our physical care. And then after I cover a few legal issues, I will turn it over to Taylor, who is actually a young woman who resides at the Oak Creek Youth Correctional Facility in Albany. Taylor, as it turns out, had put together with some of her friends at Oak Creek, had put together an informational presentation for other youth about being a DOC youth in OYA custody. So a few of the slides are going to be from Taylor's presentation that she prepared for other youth. And then we'll turn it over to Sang Dow, who was a longtime resident of McLaren recently was the recipient of a commutation from Governor Kitzhaber after he made the transition from OYA to DOC close custody, and now is running the Multnomah County Juvenile Department. He's employed at the Multnomah County Juvenile Department. And I'll try to move through my slides quick because I know that they are the stars of the show. I'm going to give you just a few contextual slides so you get an idea of the number of youth in OYA care who are what we call DOC youth. There are about 400,000 youth in the state of Oregon, just to give you some context, 400,000 youth. And of those 400,000 youth, only about 900 end up in OYA community supervision, and another 630 end up in close custody facilities that are run by OYA. So it's a very small number of Oregon youth that end up in the care of the Oregon Youth Authority. And now I'm going to break down of those 629, the second slide or the second circle there, of those 630 youth who are in close custody, about half of those come to us from the juvenile courts. They are what we call OYA youth. They are committed by a juvenile court. They're adjudicated of a juvenile offense, and OYA has parole authority over those youth. The other half of the youth that are in our close custody environments are youth like Sang was and Taylor is. They're what we call DOC youth. They are committed to our care by the adult court system. They are in the adult court system by virtue of the charge that is the charge of indictment and the charge of conviction. If it is a Measure 11 charge, or if it starts out as a Measure 11 charge and is later reduced, and a young person is 15, 16, or 17 years old under that measure because of the seriousness of the offense, they are in adult court and they stay in adult court. They are legally, they are committed to the legal custody of the Department of Corrections, but another statute places them in the physical custody of the Oregon Youth Authority. Of those youth, so this tells you that we have 297 DOC youth in our care, and this blows that up and shows you where they all come from. 179 of those almost 300 youth have straight mandatory minimum Measure 11 sentences from adult courts throughout the state. 104 of those youth are what we internally at OYA called waivers, and that means that they started out as a Measure 11 but pled down to something else that is a non-Measure 11. Often it's an attempted Measure 11 offense. And by virtue of pleading out of Measure 11, they are not serving a mandatory minimum sentence anymore, but they're still considered an adult offender legally, and they are still committed, if convicted, to the custody of DOC and placed in the physical custody of OIA. And then there are only eight that are committed to us under a very, very narrow statute. It's called the 1049 statute that applies to second-degree kidnapping and sex abuse and robbery under very, very limited circumstances. Yeah, there are a handful of those. Yeah. So those are by far the smallest population. Now, let me just tell you about the legal box that these kids are in. As I mentioned, by nature of the crime charge, that is really, and conviction, that is really the deciding factor of whether a youth 15, 16, or 17 years old will move through the system and be legally treated as an adult. The period of time that's critical is when did the offense occur and when did the sentencing take place. I'm not going to go through these bullets, but I'm just going to give you the idea. And basically the idea is if the conduct occurred before age 18 and the sentencing occurs before age 20, then the statutes operate to say, even though this youth is legally considered an adult for criminal law purposes, we're going to place that youth in the physical custody of the Oregon Youth Authority. And there's an upper range for when those youth can stay with the Oregon Youth Authority. The upper range is whichever happens first, either the end of their sentence or until they turn 25. If they turn 25 and they still have more time to serve on their sentence, then they must be transferred to the physical custody of the Department of Corrections. If they are under 25 and their sentence expires, then OIA has to turn them over to the Community Corrections Authority from the county in which they were sentenced. And one of the tricky things around this, we noticed when counsel asked us to give this presentation, one of the things we understood you were interested in was this concept that youth who age out of OIA custody end up in the physical custody of DOC, and that is a tricky part of the system. Another, I'd submit, a tricky part of the system is even those youth who don't age out of OIA, youth like Taylor, once her sentence is done, and she and many youth like her, while she won't be going to the physical custody of DOC, she will be transferring to an adult community corrections caseload. And that is also the statutes operate in a way that once these DOC youth are no longer in the physical custody of OIA, OIA is not authorized to expend resources on them. We're not authorized to place them in any of our community placements. There's one other, sorry.
Joe, what's the number of folks who are adults in OIA custody who waive out before they age out? So they elect to go into the Department of Corrections. Good. As opposed to spending up until their 25th birthday.
And Chair Barker and Representative Williamson, if you'll permit me, I've got a slide that will show you. There's actually two ways that youth can move to the Department of Corrections before age 25, and I'm going to break down how many go and why.
I will wait patiently.
Okay. And I'll take that as a sign to keep going, too. Let's see here. A few other legal and operational issues. One really important philosophical issue, policy issue for OIA, whether a kid in our custody comes through us through the adult court system or through the juvenile court system, we make no differentiation in the services we provide. We provide that youth a probation officer. We provide that youth the same level of education, appropriate treatment, mental health treatment, physical care, as if they were an OIA kid. That makes no difference to us. There are some restrictions, though, that come with being a DOC kid. And one of the biggest ones is that the DOC rules around when you can leave the facility apply. We call them fence restrictions or gate restrictions. And some DOC youth are not eligible to be placed in OIA transition facilities because of the amount of time they have to serve on their sentence, the nature of the underlying conviction. And OIA doesn't control that. Representative Williamson mentioned the returns to DOC, what we call returns to DOC, and this is the chart that I mentioned. This shows you the outflow of DOC youth to the Department of Corrections. And there are two ways this can happen. One is when the youth reaches the age of 25, and the other is by the direction of the director of the Oregon Youth Authority. The category I have here is noncompliant. That's partially true. The statute that allows the director to transfer a DOC youth from OIA physical custody to DOC physical custody before age 25 says that that the offender must be, and that is the term used, offender in the statute must be a risk to others or not compliant with treatment in a way that is, you know, not conducive to their rehabilitation. So for purposes of the chart, that's what noncompliant means. We do control that, though. And
so, Joe, I'm just kind of curious. Apparently, you must have had some type of a policy change then.
Yeah, I'm really
08 and 09.
I'm really glad you mentioned that, Chair Barker and Representative Olson. The number of youth in OIA physical custody who have transferred to the Department of Corrections because of behavior, as you can see from that the chart column the furthest to the right, has drastically decreased. And you may recall last session we presented you with an informational hearing on the youth reformation system tools, the data-driven tools that we are using to determine what the best setting is for different youth based on not just what public safety likes to go to, you know, the nature of the crime and only the nature of the crime, but rather a whole set of risk and protective factors. And what we were seeing in using those tools was that some of our youth, if they moved to the Department of Corrections, their recidivism likelihood would drastically increase. And we take that seriously. Our mission at its core is a balance of public safety and development or reformation. But that public safety mission really drove us to say, look, if we have a youth that's acting out in our facility and potential remedy is to send them to Department of Corrections so that they are no longer our problem, so to speak, we really need to evaluate whether or not moving them to the Department of Corrections is just creating bigger problems down the line, bigger problems for other victims in the future, bigger problems for that youth in the future. And those numbers are something we're very, very proud of. So, and the column in the middle shows you how many age out because of turning 25. This is the slide that shows you the inflow. So I just showed you moving out of the system, and this shows you how many are coming in. As you can see, those numbers are decreasing too, and you may ask me why, and I will tell you that I really don't know, and I don't think anybody does. There are all kinds of theories. Overall, juvenile crime is down, that may be part of it, probably is part of it. I am now going to turn over the presentation first to Taylor, who is going to tell you a little bit about, unless you have more questions about the legal box, happy to answer.
I had a bill in this session to require a second look at people before they went to DOC. Is that a useful thing, do you think? I mean, I know you can't take a formal position on the bill, but, I mean, it just seemed to me, without any data or information, a logical thing to do at what's a critical point. I wonder if you have a...
Sure.
Insight into that.
Chair Barker and Representative Greenlich, there is a lot of discussion around the concept referred to in various ways that was embodied in your bill, as I understand it. Representative Olson has also been an advocate of this idea, and the way I would articulate it is the idea is, look, you've got a youth who, because of their age, is being placed in the physical custody of the youth justice facility. And that facility and the people that work for that facility are investing a lot of money in that youth. They're getting educated. They're getting treatment. They're truly being held accountable for what they did. And the idea is if that youth is going to then be transferred to an adult facility with adult offenders and be in a different milieu that is not as treatment-focused and rehabilitatively focused as OYA's settings are, do you run the risk of losing your investment, losing the return on your investment of that youth for that time and that money that you spent while they were in OYA's physical custody? And a lot of folks would tell you not only the OYA is not taking a position on those bills, but a lot of folks would argue that that it makes a lot of sense to kind of pause before that transfer to adult corrections happens, and look at the case, growth and the development that the youth has demonstrated. And I think some of the concepts, and particularly Representative Olson's, as I understand it, would require and Representative Greenlicht's, I think, also would require a hearing where the district attorney, the victim, folks would, have their say. I think the counter argument to that, though, is, it's a truth and sentencing issue. And if we are going to treat young people legally as adults, due to the nature of the behavior and the nature of the conduct or the consequences of that conduct, that the sentence that is imposed in court ought not to be overturned, and the victims ought not to be potentially re-traumatized by bringing them back to court for another hearing. I tried my best to give the objective. I put my Judiciary Council hat on and gave the objective pros and cons of that particular measure. But Mr. Withnell's in the audience, and I'm sure he'd like to talk to you about that, too. I know he has a position on that. I really do. You've heard a lot about what we are doing in the agency and moving the agency from a corrections-focused agency that historically has been close custody, secure facilities that provide some education and treatment, to education and treatment facilities, developmentally appropriate facilities that happen to be secure. And Taylor and Sang are really some of the highlights of what we're doing and what the men and women that work at OYA come to work every day for. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Taylor, who's going to tell you a little bit about herself and give you a little bit of her presentation that won't be nearly as dry as mine.
For the record, my name is Taylor Steiner. Thank you for inviting me here today. I'm going to start out with our slideshow. So this is one of our units and the front of our facility. Oak Creek is one of several closed custody facilities. We have three living units enclosed in a courtyard. There's several other facilities in Oregon that are the same plan. The treatment programs offered to help us with any crimes we come in with, PTSD, human trafficking, drugs and alcohol, anything that someone comes in with, we have the treatment for them. Every youth goes to treatment Monday through Friday, but we actually have some other programs that if a youth has graduated a program and they have shown good if a youth has graduated a program and they've worked really well in it and they're a good positive peer on our unit in our facility, they can work with the other kids and co-facilitate groups and kind of help out that way. And I think that it helps a lot because, you're kind of talking to someone who's the same age as you, gone through the same thing, and they're still pretty much going through it. We have four periods a day. for school. We go to different buildings in our on our campus to kind of give you more of the high school outlook, you know, so it's kind of as regular as it can get. We also have college classes that you can take once you're graduated or even when you're in high school. And next month, we're adopting this new program where we'll actually have a lot more opportunities for college, which will be really awesome. Okay. Some of the job skills offered at Oak Creek and vocational programs are building maintenance, culinary skills, greenhouse, ground maintenance, industrial laundry working, library assistant, physical education assistant, which you do during high school with the teacher. Community service and volunteer opportunities and other trades. Certificates are available. I've gotten my food handler's license, my CPR and first aid since I've been there. This is some of our, just all of the OYA facilities and what how many kids that they take. So secure youth facilities are where all Measure 11 offenders that are in OIA go to, and adult, they can be waived Measure 11s too. Like myself, I'm going to charge as an adult, but I don't have a Measure 11. So that's where I would go. And then some other OIA kids who take the next step and they go to work or study camps, and it's kind of the in-between before you're out in the community, but you're not totally in custody. So, yeah. So the intake. Male DOC youth are sent to Hillcrest Youth Correctional Facility in Salem after their sentencing, and female DOC are sent to Oak Creek in Albany for a full evaluation. While at Hillcrest or Oak Creek, youth receive medical and mental health screening assessments, psychological testing, and risk assessments. All of these assessments help determine the right facility and treatment program for the youth. So the very beginning is where you kind of start out and see what you're going to do to put your next step forward to your treatment and what's going to help you in your time that you're there. So these are some of the Measure 11 offenses that you can be charged for as for an adult. Not all of them, though. It's just kind of when we go through this slide with the youth, we want them to be able to see, you know, kind of what can land you here. Okay, juveniles convicted of Measure 11 offenses are placed in the legal custody of Oregon Department of Corrections, which I normally refer to as DOC. So originally, every 16 to 18-year-old who is sentenced to DOC was sentenced to a DOC facility, Oregon Correctional Intake Center, or Coffee Creek. Now, DOC youth are transferred directly from jail or detention to Hillcrest or Oak Creek. Statute requires that DOC juveniles be transferred and housed at OIA. Inmates under age 16 must be housed at OIA. Inmates age 16 or older may be housed at OIA until 25. Inmates who will complete their sentencing before age 25, like myself, could serve all their time in OIA. Inmates aged 16 or older can return to DOC to complete their sentences if they become a disciplinary or a security concern, like we mentioned earlier. DOC youth who finish their sentence while in OIA are supervised on parole by adult community corrections, regardless of their age. OIA youth who are paroled from OIA custody are supervised by a juvenile parole officer. Okay, so now I'm going to tell you a little bit about myself. Looks like I missed a slide. Okay, so this wasn't.
That's okay. No? Okay. I want to hear about you.
Okay, so I guess I'll talk about me now.
There you go.
Okay, here's actually our group right now. And Christina, who's with me today, is the one who kind of took over our group and started it with us. So that's pretty cool. Okay, now on to me. I'm going to tell you a little about me and how I got where I'm at today. Me, like many young females, was very emotionally affected by the breakup with my boyfriend. Emotions of anger, jealousy, and revengeful thoughts. Next, the taunting and the challenging happened with his new girlfriend, and I found I didn't have the skills to deal with the situation. And the end result was that I ended up in a physical fight with her, a fight in which I was responsible for her being injured. Before all this started, she used to be my best friend. I was charged with attempted assault 2 and unlawful use of a weapon that are all adult charges. That was at my final sentencing. At first, I was looking at a mandatory Measure 11. The last year and a half, I have worked on treatment in every aspect of my life. that I needed. The most beneficial treatment that I think that I've done was when I first got to Oak Creek and we did all my evaluations, and, you know, what I needed to do personally for me was focus on me. And so I worked one-on-one with a doctor and kind of broke down everything that, you know, that really was affecting my life. And I noticed that my thinking patterns were kind of what really needed to be changed. So that's what I've started working on, and it's made a really big impact. I also took a group called Aggression Replacement Therapy, where I learned it's okay to be angry. It's normal, and I'm not some monster because I get angry sometimes. It's just about how you handle it. I took Dialect Behavioral Therapy, which are standard life skills that every youth takes at Oak Creek, you know, just kind of to learn how to be normal, you know, and deal with normal life consequences and just how to handle it. I graduated TAP 19, which is a drug and alcohol relapse prevention group. Like many kids my age, my crime was not related to drugs or alcohol, but I am a teenager and I am going back out to the real world soon. So I figured I can't have, you know, too many skills under my belt. So I took relapse prevention just to have that, you know, so that it doesn't become a problem in my future. Aside from all this therapy, I have been in a support group for DOC, and it's where all of the long-term DOC group, not that are in OIA custody, we all come together once a week, and we work on how we can give back to the community and work with other youth and go to detentions. And so we're working on a video to kind of tell our stories and how most of us weren't very really aware of Measure 11s or how you can be waived into adult court before you're actually an adult. And so we also work on just how it is being in OIA custody, because we do have a longer time than the OIA, so we deal with different struggles. And sometimes it's more difficult when everybody's talking about leaving and you still have a while or something, just kind of the normal things. And it's nice for all of us to be together and be able to work on it. So what's next for me is my release in September, which is really close. Even though I've had an OIA PO while I've been at Oak Creek, I don't know who my adult PO will be when I leave. And so I've changed and I've worked hard and I want to better my future. And so I've done everything I can to step out of here and benefit me in the best way possible. And I've worked with my OIA PO and OIA staff who I'm with every day. But my new DOC PO won't really know me and will only know me kind of by the positive notes they've seen in my charges. And so that's just kind of one thing that comes from being an OIA and getting their help and then going out to being DOC. Okay. What I've learned, the most significant things are to appreciate life, appreciate, you know, my freedom and how easy, you know, 5 seconds or 5 minutes can change my whole life. Now, in the time that I've done, I just realized that you know, I am a human and things are going to be thrown at me, and it really just depends on how I handle myself. And I'd much rather be someone who, you know, can be a positive thing to the community than someone who tears it down. Well, I don't know if you guys have any questions.
I just would have one. So you had a Measure 11 charge. Did they send you under Measure 11, or did they downward depart before you went in?
So the day before my sentencing, the DA pushed out my court date because they found more evidence on my behalf that helped me and kind of made things more clear. So they dropped 2 Measure 11s to still adult charges, just not mandatory sentences. So I have good time, and that's why I'm getting out early on September.
Thank you.
Yeah. I want to thank you all for guiding me, giving me this opportunity.
Representative.
You know, I can remember back one time, believe it or not, I was young. Almost as young as this guy. But we had kids do stupid things. 7th grade, 8th grade, up till freshman, sophomore, juniors. I can remember taking 2 kids that had a fight and they put them in a ring with a pair of gloves and let them beat each other for half an hour. Worked great. That was the end of it. Became best friends, and nobody went anywhere.
Friends.
Yeah.
Can't do that anymore. Might work.
Yeah. Well. It might not be an evidence-based treatment, I hear you. You know, if I could, Taylor graduated from high school last week. And she also turned 17. So I will pivot over to Sang next.
I'm just kind of curious, since I haven't been out to Oak Creek for a while, are all three units, Taylor, full right now?
Yeah.
They are? Okay.
Yes. A couple months ago, we only had two units, and we just opened up a third for intake.
Okay.
Yeah.
And just follow up. Sure. Are you taking any classes from Lynn Benton?
Not currently. I just graduated on Friday, and the new semester starts in about 2 weeks. And I'm looking into medical terminology.
You're doing what?
Medical terminology.
Well, good for you.
Yeah, we have a really good program for it, so I'm excited.
Very good.
Thank you.
Well, good afternoon, Chair Barker, Vice Chair Williamson, and Vice Chair Olson. My name is Sang Dao, and please feel free to interject with questions as I share a little bit about my story and my experiences. I'm 25 years old. I am a first-generation Vietnamese American. I come from a real large family. My grandparents fled from war-torn Vietnam during the height of the war in the 70s with 9 kids. So you can imagine how much larger my family has gotten over the years. I'm a proud college graduate, and I'm currently applying for graduate school. I'm gainfully employed by Multnomah County Department of Community Justice Juvenile Services Division, and my role with the county is a program aide with the Systems Change Unit. In my spare time, I enjoy fishing, hiking, spending time with my extra large family, and it's growing. I want to share with you a little bit about how I got here today. As I shared that right there, you might have think like I've had a stable life and, uneventful childhood and things like that. But I mean, what you see on the surface isn't what really was happening deep, on the bottom, or like something that you can't see. My life dramatically changed on March 17, 2015. And that was the day I was released from prison. I've done nearly 8 years with the Oregon Youth Authority and spent 4 months in adult prison in Department of Corrections. I was released due to a commutation granted by then Governor Kitzhaber, and it released me 4 years earlier from what my projected release date was in 2018. I was serving a 12.5-year sentence, and what resulted of that 12.5-year sentence, or what caused that 12.5-year sentence, was solely on my own wrongdoing. I was involved at the age of 17. I was involved in 3 gang-related shootings, and that gave me the 12.5-year sentence. I gave myself that 12.5-year sentence. I attribute everything that led up to that event, the events of the shootings, because I grew up, I didn't have the tools to be resilient. I had an absent father. I had a language barrier growing up. My mom solely raised me and my brother on her own, and she was really young, and she was working multiple jobs just to make ends meet to support 2 kids. I lack a role model in my life to show me, to instill values and beliefs in me that I could hold on to when times of my character are being tested. That and being coupled with living in a neighborhood, I grew up in East Oakland, California, and it was an impoverished area, and it was plagued with a lot of gang warfare and drug trade. So when I was young, I took a lot in about my surroundings, and that kind of made the makeup of what resulted in those shootings that I was involved in. I came to Oregon Youth Authority McLaren at the age of 17, and like I mentioned, I was serving a 12.5-year sentence. At the time, being 17, I was struggling with my identity. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what I was capable of. I didn't really think I had much potential or anything like that. However, the stark reality of doing a 12 and a half year sentence really dawned on me, because I mean, I was so used to being living day to day and not having a care or anything like that until I was incarcerated. And then now, you know, I could see my whole future. Just I didn't see the end of the tunnel, but I knew that my future for the next 12 and a half years will consist of just being confined in the space. And I really questioned myself. I didn't know where I was going. But all I knew was that, you know, I'm in a place that I didn't want to be. I slowly asked myself all these questions, like, why am I here, and this and that. And the only thing I came up with is because of my choices. And it was true. It was because of my choices that got me to got me incarcerated for that long of a time. I didn't want that, and I was fortunate to have my mom stood by my side the whole time, and fortunate to come to an OYA facility where there were supporting staff and a safe environment for me to ask those kind of questions, but safely reflect about myself, and in an environment where it kind of fostered growth and I'm able to rise above that. And so I started asking myself all these questions, and I really wanted to make a change, but I didn't quite know how. However, because of the support that I've had, they led me and guided me in the right direction. I was able to find a space to reinvent myself and just to model myself after, you know, I took little traits or characteristics out of people that I really admire, or, you know, even from reading and different kind of inspirational leaders and things. And I was like, I want to adopt that for myself. And so I was able to do that. I redefined my values and beliefs. And that was through just talking to positive people, having a positive group around me, and just asking them about their outlooks on lives and how do they feel about things. And eventually I was able to adopt that. I took advantage of the treatment programs. And the treatment programs helped me kind of unravel a lot of my errors in judgment and my thinking patterns. And it helped kind of cement it in a way where I am able to process things in a healthy way and self-regulate my own emotions. Education was a big part. I came to McLaren and I've never farewelled in school. Mind that I mentioned that I had a language barrier and I couldn't communicate well in school. However, coming to McLaren, to Oregon Youth Authority facility, they offered education, and I wanted to take another shot at it. And through the patience of the teachers and, of course, myself, I was able to earn my high school diploma. And I mentioned that I'm a proud college graduate, and I earned my four-year degree while I was at McLaren. Vocational skills, I was able to take advantage of some of the vocational skills, although like for an example, I was in their electrical maintenance program, and although I didn't have a desire to do any kind of electrical maintenance and work or become an electrician when I was to get out of Oregon Youth Authority when I was released from prison, I still took advantage of it because I knew that it was going to help me, and it's something else that I could fall back on should I need it in the future. After doing all of that and involving myself in all of that and just gaining a sense of my character, I spent about 7 years in Oregon with the Oregon Youth Authority before I turned 25. And that thought always lingered in my head, like, okay, I'm eventually going to go to prison. And so everything I did up to that point, I always had that lingering thought that I'm going to go to prison. So I need to kind of get to know myself and kind of cement my character, so wherever I go and whatever I'm faced with or challenged with, that I will always have myself to rely on, and to not go back to my old ways, which is resorting criminal activity and behaviors. I was transferred to the Department of Corrections 2 days or 3 days before my birthday, my 25th birthday, and from there, it was just like night and day. I mean, the interaction that I had with the staff and, you know, the support network that I've had with Oregon Youth Authority, with the people of Oregon Youth Authority, I didn't have that now. I felt like a fish out of water. I was like all by my lone self. And going there, it made me realize just some, and I mind that I only spent 4 months in Oregon or in the Department of Corrections, but it made me realize that, you know, I didn't, as strong as a character that, or as strong as a person that I view myself as, and as strong as I view my mental fortitude as, I would have never survived or lasted if I was to go there at 17, or if I went there earlier. And I couldn't help but think about, what about all of the other youth that are faced with similar experiences of going to Department of Corrections. I was there for 4 months, and I mean, I could feel like my character being tested, my values and my beliefs being tested every day. And I was fortunate enough to earn or receive the grant of a commutation to be released from prison, but I couldn't help but think about, what about all the other peoples that didn't have that chance and that are as fortunate as I was. I share that because I think that what seems like there's different decision points within the system. And when I was 17 and I was going, and I was already sentenced and I was going to the department, or to the Department of Corrections Intake Center, which is at Coffee Creek, I spent 33 days there. And I spent 33 days there because I was processed as an adult, and I should have been only there for like 3 or 4 days. However, they processed me as an adult, and had I not opened up my mouth and told my counselor then that, oh, you know, I was 17 when I committed my crime, and I think the judge ordered me to go to Oregon Youth Authority. Had I not opened my mouth and someone was receptive enough to look into it and push the paperwork so I would go to Oregon Youth Authority, I couldn't help but think how different my life would be. I probably wouldn't be here talking to you today. And I'd probably still be in prison. And like I said, I was struggling with my identity. And so I really would have felt like my criminal thinking and behavior would have been cemented. And that's all I would have seen for myself, is to be a hardened criminal. So having experience from both sides, just going to Oregon Youth Authority for the first 7 years and then transitioning over to the Department of Corrections, I'm very grateful to have spent time in the Oregon Youth Authority, and I'm very grateful to be out and only spent 4 months in the Department of Corrections. But for those who are going to spend a longer time in the Department of Corrections, I can't help but think all of the investment and all of the good work that was done in Oregon Youth Authority, how much of it will go to waste if they were transferred and had to do time in the Department of Corrections. So if you have any questions.
Yeah, I do. Actually, saying thanks, and Taylor, for you too. I'm curious, how has it played out for you right now in your relationship with the victim? For victims.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Chair Barker and Vice Chair Olson, that's a good question. And for me, because I went through the whole clemency process, my victims agreed, and they wrote a letter of support to say that, you know, they support me being out and everything like that. And I mean, from a personal standpoint and my beliefs, is that I could have felt pity for myself, and I could have just, you know, did my time and just kind of skate on by and not make anything of myself or anything. But if I'm not really remorseful for the things that I've done, and not keep like the harm that I've caused my victim in mind, and how much I want to undo that or try to allay as much of that as possible, then I wouldn't have tried to build myself up and grow better, or grow from the situation and just try to do more good in the world. And I think from my personal standpoint, that's what kept me from going back into the deep end is because I wanted to show them that I'm remorseful, even though, you know, I don't have direct contact with them, but just know that, you know, I my life has changed because of that, and I will do whatever is willing to take just to make it better.
Thank you. Taylor, how's that played out for you with the victim?
Representative, I've only spent a year and a half in custody, and I actually had a second look to go to, and my victim was there, and they didn't agree with me getting my second look, and so I was denied. I think that just because it has been such a short time, I haven't been able to just kind of show the work that I really have done and the work that I've grown, and kind of just I'm in a totally different mindset that I don't think until I'm out and, you know, I continue to go to school and better the community and a career that I want, that my victim and their family will kind of see the good parts to me going through this and being an OIA as charged as an adult.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. O'Leary, so you probably know Jennifer, Representative Remington, and I, and some of us went down to Angola Prison, and they had a program down there, for younger people down there, sentences are really severe, but they have a program where somebody sentenced to 10 years and then given an opportunity to get skills, job skills, and they had plumbing and automotive things, but they got a real certificate. They were, I think, a minimum of 2 years. Most of them were there at least four. But it wasn't just a piece of paper that said certificate, you know, can do this, that was industry standard. And so I'm wondering, does OIA have industry standard certificates where you can, where somebody can come out, like with electrical training or?
Chair Parker, members of the committee, we do. We have many. I don't have them off the top of my head. I can get you those. And actually, there's a bill that passed, has already been signed by the governor in this session, that will expand and allow us to expand what we're already doing and create some apprenticeship programs within our facility that'll be able to open up even more of those opportunities. One of the things that both Taylor and Sang mentioned and were beneficiaries of is the tremendous amount of access to online education that's now available through massive online course material. I'm proud to say that the folks at OIA are really on the cutting edge of utilizing those tools in our close custody facilities so that there are hundreds of young people that are exactly like these two here with me who are in our close custody settings right now, and more will come and flow through, that they'll have those same opportunities to earn college credit and get real certificates for job readiness in the future.
Okay, thank you. Any further? Well, thank you very much. Thank you for coming in and telling your stories.
Excellent.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Wish you all the success in the future.
Thank you.
Anything more? Stand up here. Thank you, committee.
I am out of here.